The Upland Nomads podcast is brought to you by two guys that share a common passion, chasing birds and following our dogs through some of the most beautiful landscapes in the world, the uplands. Join us while we have in-depth conversations with others from all over the country that enjoy and share the same passions as us. Welcome to the Upland Nomads podcast.
To another beer 30. Been a while. Michael and I are just gonna hop right into it. We're kind of doing first bird dog stories. We got a few listeners on tonight. I'm just gonna go right into it. Everybody kind of knows Michael and I's first dog, Rix and Willow. We talk about them all the time, and my boy Cash. I'll give him a little love, but we're gonna go right into it with Steven.
There you go. Yeah,
Steven, you want to give us just a little bit of background? Where you're coming from, who you are, et cetera.
Oh, yeah, name's Steven. Got a Cache Valley, right out of Logan. Fairly new to bird dogging, man. It's started off as a little hobby, getting into training dogs here and there, just having a little bit of fun, and then totally absorbed my life. Happened around the same time my daughter was born, so it's kind of splitting the two loves of the life pretty heavy, and then just figured out how to mash them really well together. And so it's just been living the dream now, you know, getting the family involved and the wife involved and getting them out to these little events and foundation dinners and just trying to get the family involved with the bird dog and experience as much as I can to keep it active.
Sweet. So what was your, what breed of dog was your first dog?
It was a Griff. Yeah.
Griff? Griff? How old is a Griff?
So I got the Griff from a puppy. It is my first bird dog that I still have now. He just turned 3 yesterday, and it has been pretty fun. But I have trained another dog since then, too, so I could answer these questions properly.
Getting your first bird dog, what kind of training methods did you use? Or did you send it to a professional and do it yourself, DIY?
DIY all the way. I thought, man, because I first saw bird dog work, I was out hunting ducks, and I just saw it set up right behind this guy too early in the morning, didn't see him. I guess I was a little late to the show up, right? And I set up right behind him, and you know, once birds started flying, I saw him peep up and I was like, wow, I won't shoot nothing. I'll just sit back there and watch him work his dog. And I was out there by myself, young, just ready to, I guess, all the sights I could see and watch this guy shooting birds, casting his dog. I was like, this is it. This is what I got to start doing. This is amazing. You know, I did him out there, just run a little black lab, standing there, like whistle stops in the water, she'd spin, look at him, he'd send her back, and it is amazing. And so I was like, I got to get into this. And so I picked up my Griff, and I just was like, I'm duck hunter all the way. That's what I'm doing. And so I watched all these tapes on Chris Aiken, how he trained his pups, all this and that, and tried to follow that method, and then realized that waterfowl is just not as fun as chasing chucker. And there's it's a little bit more opportunity to get into chucker than you can into the waterfowl living in northern Utah. And so from there, I just started searching all over YouTube, reading books, reaching out to people who had Griffs. Ended up meeting up with this guy in Lewiston, Utah, who his breed, or whose Griffs, their lines collided with mine. And he had my dog's grandma and his aunt kind of ordeal. And so I met up with him and just kind of connected and asked him on pointers, and man, he busted out some bird launchers, first things I ever seen, and got the dog working really well. And from there, it was just all wild bird contact after getting him to point, and no woe command, no nothing. I had no idea what that was. But once he started pointing birds, I just took him out in the wild birds, and they should have taught him how to work.
Awesome. Any mistakes? You said you trained another dog since?
Yeah.
So, like, what were some, like, mistakes, like, hey, when you realize, like, hey, when you started training this other one, you're like, oh, maybe I should have done it different with my first dog.
I was expecting too much too soon. I figured that as soon as I saw him pick it up once in the backyard or in a field slightly bigger, I could watch him pick it up on some type of acreage or in the mountains or on bird launchers spread out 100 plus yards apart. And that's just not the case. You know, everything builds upon itself, and It builds by footsteps, not by leaps and bounds. And some dogs do, and this dog sure didn't. And so I felt like he's got to have the patience. And when it's your dog, that patience flies out the window sometimes, and you get a little hot. You just got to know when to cut it short and put that dog back in the kennel and walk away from it for a little bit.
What are some of the biggest takeaways from hunting and training your first bird dog?
The love of doing it myself. I don't think I'd send my dog off unless I can go out there with him to do it the whole way. And then it takes a lot of time. It's a big commitment. There's no half-assing it for sure. You're either full send to doing it yourself, or you better pay for somebody else to do it. Because, man, you hear it all the time. You're out there hunting in the fields, whether you're chasing roosters or you park too close to somebody in the mountains, and somebody's blowing a whistle, screaming, cussing, hooping, hollering. And it's just because their dog ain't trained. It's because they let that fall short.
So, you mentioned you trained another dog since. So, how did your like first dog that you trained kind of shape the methods that you used to train that second dog?
Oh man, it cut out those videos pretty well entirely, because then I had this little method written down. Because as I was training, I was writing down everything I thought that was real useful and all the tips and tricks I learned from everybody else. And I took away that I want my dog to retrieve the hand no matter what's going on. Like I hear down in the South, there's guys that run pointers and flushers, and that pointer points and that flusher flushes and retrieves. That pointer don't move. I didn't care what I had. I just wanted that dog to bring me a bird back. So I took it as force fetch is going to be the number one thing that I care about after that dog has to point in it, because that'll develop as wild bird contact comes, because it's real hard to imitate that. Even with the launcher, that it's just almost impossible. And then I just took force fetch like all the way through, start to finish, nice and slow, and just take my time with it as long as I can. Just be patient in every other aspect, because if you can be patient, force fetch in your dog, everything else will be a little easier.
What's your best hunting story with your first bird dog?
Best hunting story, man. We're hunting chucker, the real local in Cache Valley, just kind of out in the mountain ranges right there, not far of a drive from the house, and very limited time. And so I'm huffing and puffing right after leaving the truck. It's a straight uphill climb. And so I come up over the top, and I think I set my gun down or lean it up against my knee, and I just prop my hands down. I'm just sitting there, let my dog venture off. I think he's just going to go putt around for a little bit because he's still real new. And he busts a covey. We watch it fly, and I watch it fly right over me. If I had my shotgun in my hand, I probably could have poked one out of the air with it. And so I figure, that's on him. That's on me for not being ready. Whether he was a part of that bust or not, we're just going to keep working this ridge and kind of peek it out and see what we could see from there, and see if we need to go over a ridge or what happens. And so we start coming up, and I'm hearing these chuckers just chucking at me. And I get a good visual on the sentry just sitting up on a rock, just plain as day. Skyline this can be big old bird. And he's not seeing us, and I don't want him to see us. And so I get my dog, and at this point, we're just pounding lunch. So I'd give my dog probably half a peanut butter jelly sandwich. And so I send him kind of off and around the back of the mountain, hoping he's going to catch wind and come back over the top. So I send him off, and I kind of take the same route, just following him, putting real slow. And it was just perfect the way it worked out. He came right up over the ridge, right up on these birds right above him. And GPS starts going off, dog's on point, holding point, and I don't know how long he's gonna hold it. So I start hightailing up there. I come over and I see my dog's head, and he's locked up. And so I work around to the side and come over the side, and I shoot a big bird, big old chucker right over the first. I shoot a side by side, miss the first barrel, but gather up and able to set one down with the second. Dog, it was just picture perfect after that. Watching the point go down, he holds the point. I'm able to get the shots off. He doesn't move until the bird's down, and that's the first chucker that dog ever retrieved for me. And it was unforgettable, one of the best moments of my life. Chucker goes down probably about 35 yards out, just coasts just for a second, then hits dirt, and able to gather him up and trees it back to hand. It couldn't have been better. It was just an unforgettable moment. And that was the only, we saw two more coveys that day. But that was the only bird I was able to drop, and I will put that down as hands down the best hunt I'll probably ever have.
That sounds like a pretty fucking sweet story.
Yeah. David, how long did you say you've been hunting Tucker for?
This is my third year.
Nice. Legs get bigger every year, huh?
Yep. You're not kidding, man. They get a little easier to climb.
Yeah.
Any plans on adding some more ammo to the kennel?
Yeah. So I got this cool little setup. Back at the house, I got kind of this workbench lined in the garage, and then I got some panels built underneath them, welded up, and looking to fill them up. I got three made right now, and so I'm looking to get a wire pair added to the mix. I've been checking out a couple kennels, and I definitely want another Griff before I start venturing out into what my wife would prefer, me getting into these red dogs, but we'll see what comes first, you know. It looks like everybody's falling victim, dang it. So
my wife wants,
I might just follow the domino effect.
My wife wants a red dog, and I want a setter, so we're getting a setter.
There you go.
Do you say you're interested in the wire?
Yeah, wire hair. I won't take that one off your hands, man. You can't claim to.
You should have hit him up about a month ago.
Yeah. Oh, I had a good one
there for sale beforehand, but yeah. I've got one. Just give me a ring. I got one for you.
There you go.
Steven, I got to ask, being a trucker hunter, what made you want to go with the Griffon?
Man, my wife was complaining about having allergies from the pup. And so I didn't know what to do. She's like, I don't want to crazy all the stories of our friends having germ-wired hairs from Nevada. She's like, we just don't want germ-wired hair German short hair. And so I was like, okay, let's put it around, see what we can find. I'm dying for a bird dog, and she found Griffons. And I was like, I'll settle for him. And, man, I didn't settle for much. He's dang tough, doesn't complain about nothing. I've had that dog come back to me at the end of the day with cactus quills, blown pads, everything in that hunt. Never stop unless I see blood in the snow, and then I'm the one calling it. It's crazy. Like, he's just willing to put it all out there. I'm sure most dogs are, but he's just tough. I've seen my buddy's German short hairs come back and the hunt's paused because of cactus quills and stuff like that. And man, it might be that coat or something with him. He's tough.
Yeah, nice.
So those poodle pointers, another hypoallergenic one. I hunt with a couple.
And they're a little ugly when they're wet.
The poodle pointers? Yeah. I hunted a couple. They had pretty sleek coats. They almost look pretty much just like a wire hair. They just had the mustache, basically.
Yeah, there's a guy around my house that owns one, and I thought it was a wire hair when I first saw it. And he was quick to correct me, you know, like everybody is. And so they're not a bad looking pup by any means.
No, I hunted with a couple. One ranged pretty good, actually, when we were out pheasant hunting, but. And the other one was like 5 months old when I hunted with it, so it was puppy walks.
Yeah, range pretty important. I'm surprised to see my Griff range anywhere from like 80 to 120. I think anything outside of that, he'd be too solo and start busting coveys or trying to catch birds himself. But that's why I'm looking for a wire pair, because I want a dog that has a little bit more pep in the step and maybe get out there a little bit further.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Steven, thanks for sharing your first dog stories. We'll go right into Laramie.
So I have a lab. He's a rescue lab and his name is Goose. And I have to preface this story by saying this all started because of my grandpa. He was a dog trainer during the Korean War. And when he came back, he started training bird dogs. So I grew up with setters and English pointers. And I was looking for a setter until I found Goose, and then I fell in love with him. And actually, the week I got him, my grandpa ended up in the hospital with a stroke. And that weekend, I picked up Goose. We're on our way home. And actually, a pheasant flew out in the road right in front of us and bounced off the windshield. That very next Monday, it was about 3 a.m. and I was taking my dog for a walk before work. when I got a call from my father that my grandpa had unfortunately passed away. Well, on that fall, I said, come hell or high water, this dog's going to hunt, just like my grandpa would have done. And so far, he's been a really, really good dog. And I can't ask for anything better because of the situation. But every time I look at him, I can see my grandpa looking down, seeing how proud he is that I'm finally getting back into bird hunting after years and years of not having my own dog. So that's how I started. I've been bird hunting since I was 10 years old, as soon as I got my hunting license. And I've never stopped, but I've been hunting with other people's dogs or no dogs at all.
So Goose is your first dog.
He is technically my first dog, but I grew up all through my life helping train English pointers, English shedders, German shepherd, or we did train German shepherds for a little while for protection dogs. Weimaraners, you're about to be a couple of those.
You got something over your shoulder there.
Oh yeah, that's a Goose's kitten. Actually, these guys are two peas in a pod. You can't really separate them when they're at the house. So
he's like, "Are you sure about that?"
Yeah, that's we originally got this kitten for our other cat. And it turns out that was a mistake because now the dog and the cats are best friends. So,
so Laramie, where are you coming from tonight?
Put us on the map. I live in Eastern Washington. I've lived here my whole life. And don't let the name fool you. I wasn't born in Wyoming. I was actually born in Arkansas. So,
Arkansas to Washington. That's a
no. I was. My parents met here in Washington. Actually, no, they met in Montana. And then my dad, he is from here originally. They got married, and yeah, we've been here ever since.
So Goose is a lab, right?
Yep. Chocolate lab.
All right. And you got, how long have you had Goose?
So I picked him up last September. He was 10 months old. He is now a year and 4 months. And picked him up in September, and by middle of October, we already had a rooster under his belt.
Nice. So you did all the training.
Yeah, and I've made some mistakes. I know I have. Like, I didn't fence slow him. Because I found that out the hard way when he ran headfirst into a barbed wire fence at Mach 10 chasing a hen.
You know, luckily, like, you know, the fence thing, I think Willow's small enough. She runs near a fence, she runs underneath it. But, like, what are some of, like, the, you know, like, your biggest takeaways that you might have taken from hunting, training Goose?
The biggest takeaway I could probably say is be patient. They'll come into it because throughout the hunting season, because we were out basically every weekend, you go from him, your dog, finding maybe one or two birds to we ended on a high note with 17 birds the last 2 days of the season. And that was all him.
Does he work pretty close?
Yeah, he works within 50 to 20 yards, depending on the cover. If it's more open, he works out a little further to about 50. Sometimes you have to remind him that he's not a pointer.
It's a lot. What's, like, your best hunting story you've had with Goose? We want details.
Oh, boy. Here. We have had a it's been an interesting season, but it's probably his first rooster, which was the opening day of pheasant season. And I took him out to the spot right down the road from my grandpa's house. That's public land. Anybody can hunt it. And his first flush of the day happened to be a turkey that I almost got a 3-inch 20-gauge shell because it scared me. And I promptly missed a 3 quail that he jumped right afterwards. Then we're on the way back around, and he flushes two roosters. I shoot and miss, and then I'm on my second shot, my forehand on my shotgun decided to split. So it ended up in the dirt and in anger. And I picked it up and ran back to the car to grab my second shotgun, which is a 16 gauge. And we took off to the other end where I watched those two roosters fly into. And we flush one, and I don't even think I had my gun shouldered. I pulled the trigger, dumped it, or thought I dumped it. And it falls into the thickest willow brush you could ever think of. Like, I couldn't even walk into it. That's how thick it was. And he's trying to find a way in. I could hear him chasing this rooster, and he could hardly move. And so I finally set my gun down and come into the brush to help find it. And next thing I know, I have a rooster running between my legs. And I couldn't even bend down to catch it, so I just sat on it. He dives between my legs and knocks his rooster out from underneath me, out into the wide open. And I come crawling out of the brush. He has a hold of the rooster's head, and I have a hold of the rooster's legs. And it's about 70 degrees because it's middle of October and Washington doesn't know what that means. And I'm sitting there and I'm laughing. I'm crying because I could hear my grandpa going, "Hey, you did it, but that's not the way you're supposed to do it." And it made it even more special being his first bird, and it was probably the biggest tail feather I've ever gotten at 23 and a half. And I currently have that feather in my gun room. And every time I drive by that spot, whenever I go visit, it makes me chuckle because we've hunted this property for the last 10 years.
That's awesome. No, that's a funny, like, I know exactly what you mean when you say, like, something too thick you can't even walk through. Like, you're probably on your hands and knees trying to find a way to crawl through it to kind of help or something like that. I've done the same thing. My cocker, she's in thick cover. She's, you know, sometimes a little skittish to go in, which, you know, it's fine. It's just the way she is and whatnot. It's probably something I messed up on. But, you know, and then all of a sudden I'm in there crawling through, you know, it's usually thick cattails. Being like, all right, let's try to find this bird. But I've never caught one between my legs.
Yeah, it was too thick to even bend down, and that's how you know it's probably too thick to be in yourself.
So,
Laramie. Oh, sorry, good. Is it question time? Sorry.
It is question time. I just had a question for Laramie. So, you said you trained pointers and setters growing up. Is there a plan for a pointer or setter coming, or?
So I think I might have my girlfriend convinced on getting a second dog. And I made a mistake of sending her a picture of a Bracco puppy. A Bracco Italiano puppy.
Yeah.
A Bracco Italiano?
Yeah.
Oh, no, man.
Well, we had a family dog that was a Basset Hound growing up. And she heard all my mom's stories of the adventurous Basset Hound that ran around Wakesburg, making friends with everybody and anything. So she's like, "Oh my God, they're so cute. How much are they?" And I was like, "Oh boy."
Don't let Drew hate on them, dude. Hey man, go for it. Every bird dog needs a hunter to hunt behind or in front of. Including Broncos.
I've only ever actually seen one, so I can't really hate on them too much, but it might as well just have been, yeah, it could have been a Chihuahua on your lap. Just a big one.
Ron Bain had a couple of decent ones back in the day.
I say Ron. Ron's the only person I know what's happened.
I've actually seen him
person. Proven the litter itself. Like, he always promotes Rocco Italianos.
I seen Ron's big, the big white one. Man, it's been forever now. Bravo was his name.
Bravo, yeah.
Yeah, the big white one. And then he had the two pups. It was crazy. I meant to tell you this story earlier, Cody, when you were talking about the rat poisoning. He had two really nice pups. that ended up they died early on in life from a strange poisoning while he was on the road. That were two really nice pups that were Broncos. I think one's name was Otto, I think. I don't remember now. It was a long time ago.
It sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago.
So with your chocolate lab, does it hold pretty well on point?
He does a point. We get the lab point where he sits there and stares at him and says, "Are you going to fly or do I have to come get you?"
Yeah, my dad's got a black lab that does the same thing too. And I mean, I've seen that dog hold point even for quail down here in Iowa, where pretty much my dad and I were able to have like a conversation of who's going to flush the bird first before he decided to walk in. And I mean, it's kind of surprising with some of those labs and how well they'll actually hold point and when they actually do holds. It's interesting.
And see, I've never hunted behind a pointing lab. We never had a flusher growing up. What's that?
I've got a pointing lab.
I hear they're great dogs. I've just never met anybody that has one. Yeah. So
she points. Charlie points, yeah. I don't want her to point. I want her to just be a flushing lab, but she does like to point. But yeah, crazy. She'll want to point them and sit there all day long on those birds. And it's crazy because it's like, okay, let's put the bird in the air. Let's go. You know, let's go. I'm ready.
It just doesn't look natural either. My cousin had one too that did it too. And it's just like, are you going to squat? Are you squatting to pee or what are you doing?
Right.
Norton got a point left.
Yeah.
Yeah. Norton's got a point left.
Steady.
They are good at jobs.
What's that?
Yeah. Is it steady? Just curious. Is the lab steady?
She's steady until I release her. She'll stay there.
So just curious and I know we're a little off topic here from the original conversation, but is it like, you know, is she holding point at 30 yards or is it like underneath her nose?
She's holding point at like 10 yards, you know? Yeah. And okay. So like a lot of what we do is the pin raised bird. So, you know, it's a lot easier for me.
In the wild. So
Laramie.
The wild birds here.
So Laramie, what birds are you kind of specifically targeting with your chocolate lab?
So we go after, basically, if it flies, it dies. we go after pheasant, quail, ducks. If I could find huns, I would chase them too. It's actually kind of funny, though, on quail that are holding tight and brush, he'll sit there and circle the bush like a shark. And then until he finds a hole, he could jump into the middle of the bush in. And it doesn't matter if he crawls in or nose dives from the top in, he will find a way.
Yeah.
I wish I had it on video a couple times where he's ran up to a big old evergreen bush and then stood up on his back legs and launched like a rocket straight up into the air, head first into that bush.
Oh, wow. That's just the nice thing about hunting behind labs is like, especially if you have a good sized lab and they clear a nice little deer trail you can walk into, like the cattails and everything too. And my dad always says, I've always had like labs in my life because my dad, and I mean, he always says his motto is they're built like Buicks. I mean, they'll always run.
And see, that's the weird thing about him. He's not a very big lab. He's not a 90-pound lab, but he's only probably about 60 to 70 pounds, if that.
Oh, so he's an athletic one. That's nice.
Yeah, he's kind of a weirdo. Like, I'm used to seeing labs, like family labs, that are basically built like a, as you said, a Buick. And then I meet him and I'm like, where did all that go? Because
he's more of like the English style of a lab, not so much like the English, where it's more like short, stocky, is more longer athletic chocolate lab.
Yeah, he's more of an athletic build, but he definitely has the American lab head with the big old meat head.
Yeah.
Because you could definitely tell when he runs into a tree.
Nice.
Well, thank you, Laramie, for sharing. Nick, you've been pretty quiet.
Who is that man behind the curtain?
Oh, when you got it on mute, it's kind of easy to be quiet.
Oh, he's wearing a...
He's been laughing my ass off listening to y'all.
He's wearing a Viking sweatshirt. I like this guy already. But he's better than the Raiders fan that's on the other end over there.
You know, the Vikes are doing a lot to shake our trust again, so it'll be interesting to see where they end up.
I don't know if you're on earlier. We said we're 3-4 wins, maybe max now.
At least your team didn't pick up and leave your town, all right?
Hey,
there is that. There is that.
They'll probably do better than the guy wearing the Raiders hat.
Yeah, hey, man.
Hey, they did pick up
Gardner. Think about all those people though in St. Louis.
Say that again.
Yeah, all the Chiefs, you know, all that trash talk. You finally tied us in Super Bowls. Congratulations.
Hey, yeah, about to beat it 3 in a row.
Travis, were you a St. Louis Rams fan, though, before you were a Chiefs fan?
No, not at all.
You didn't get a Kurt Warner jersey when you were a kid? Or what?
There we go.
Somebody check his credentials.
I mean, I rooted for them when they were in the Super Bowl.
When they were
I've always been a Chiefs fan.
Okay.
I went to Lambeau Field.
You know about Trent
twice.
Green?
Yeah, I went. Yeah, talk to me about the Matt Castle years and Todd Haley, and we'll. Dude, I went to Lambeau Field where
Castle
my
too,
Chiefs.
So.
My Chiefs jersey, so sat with the Brett Favre family wearing freaking Chiefs gear. So
kudos.
All right,
yeah.
We'll get back to
yeah. Sorry about that.
Enough gang war.
a lot of free agent stuff is happening. We'll get back.
No kidding.
We just got another first round pick though, so we might get something here. Trade bait.
This might turn into a sports podcast, not a bird hunting.
We go hand in hand.
I'll watch you make it. See if we can hit my parlay tonight. Yeah. All right, Nick. You want to post on the map where you're coming from?
Yeah, I'm west of the Twin Cities, about an hour. And
where at?
Grew up hunting. So out west near Victoria. Straight west Eden Prairie, about 35 minutes.
Like, how far away from are you from Hutch?
Probably about another 30 minutes to Hutch, 40.
Okay. My parents live in Olivia, so not too far.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We drive through there all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. So, Nick, what breed of dog is your first bird dog?
So I grew up hunting with everybody else's dogs, and my family growing up didn't have dogs, and my ex's family always had Springers, and my ex had allergies. So when it came time for me to finally get my bird dog, it was what's a hypoallergenic dog that we can get. And so we looked at all the different breeds. I think we had this conversation earlier a little bit, and we ended up stumbling into a breeder that's about 15 minutes west of us that was raising Springer Doodles. So we picked up a Springer Doodle pup, and she's the cutest little thing you ever saw. She's about 34 pounds, and she's...
You got to put up a picture. I haven't seen your dog before, so...
Let me see if I can find that. Doodle. All right, hang on a sec here. Do a little computer magic.
I say, you got the background thing. I don't even know how to do that. So
I'm here. Some of you guys are going to get better at picking wives, man. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, Travis got 7 dogs, so he's
up still just like that in this country, right? This is America, right?
Oh, you guys have screen sharing disabled.
Oh, that's
shit, all right. I don't even know how to fucking enable that.
Technology and shit.
Okay.
Oops. We'll have to edit that out.
That's how you know this is an authentic hunters podcast. All right.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
you want to know how to break down a shotgun? We can do that.
Yep.
Yeah. Put it back
together. Put it back together. That's what the army teaches you.
Dude, they broke my shotgun.
Dude, between six professional hunting guides, we broke Drew's 20 gauge Beretta trying to take the plug out. Like, don't ask me how.
We can't get it back
together.
We can't get it.
Broke it.
I don't know what we did.
To be fair, out of six of us, there was probably three quarters of a sober person there.
Yeah.
All right, Nick. So, a Springer Doodle. Never heard of one.
It's just straight up Springer Doodle crossover. So she's not a standard size poodle. So probably one of the middle sized ones, whatever that is, or big ones. But she's about 35 pounds. She looks a lot like a Springer, but with the curly doodle hair. I keep her close crop during the hunting season. So she's looks almost exactly like a Springer at that point, except she's got ticking that you don't see it normally on a Springer.
Nice. So my uncle's got a couple Springers. He always runs Springers. But
and that's what I grew up hunting over is my buddies always had Springers. They had big Springers. They got them from a guy up north. They work with some great trainers, and we hunted all over the Dakotas, Iowa, southern Minnesota with those dogs. And that was kind of ingrained on me that I really wanted to get a Springer when it was my chance. But I relented and kind of went with the hypoallergenic solution given the request from elsewhere.
So it's an X. So now you're good to get a Springer.
Now I'm free.
Now you're free to just get a straight up Springer.
Straight up Springer, although these red dogs are looking pretty good at this point too.
Oh jeez. don't
red dog takeover.
Don't give Are you Cody sure any... you don't want a wire hair?
Do you know one?
I've got one that is up for discussion.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're on yet, Nick, when he was trying to get.
Ain't worth a 22 is what I heard.
No.
Allegedly. Erroneous. Erroneous.
Yeah, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Nick, is the guy who you got your Springer Doodle from, or the breeder, are they breeding them as a hunting dog, or did you just get the Springer Doodle and say, I'm going to make it a hunting dog?
The latter. So they had hunted a little bit with the Springer, who was the bitch, and she was mediocre at best. It was more of a designer dog than it was a hunting dog, but I said, I'm going to take a shot. I'm going to see if I can make this thing work. Worst case scenario, it's an awesome house dog. And as we go through this, like he turned into a pretty decent hunting dog. He is not a machine. She is not a machine. She doesn't have that purebred drive. She is not out there busting as hard as my buddy's dogs that are, you know, labs and Brittany's and some other stuff that I hunt with. So, and I'm accepting of that. I have to accept that, but she's my dog and she gets out there and she loves to do it. And that was one of the things that was a challenge for me was, man, I hope she makes it through gun breaking. Because I was a little concerned that she wasn't going to do it.
Hey, that's all that matters is that she works for you. That's all.
Yep.
That's what we're all about.
I had her train. I travel a lot for work. I'm not around very often. Most often I'm around is during hunting season, and then I'm hunting. So I'm not home then either. And fortunately, I've got a really good kennel with a really good trainer not too far from me, and when I'm traveling I board her with them and they run her on birds while I'm traveling.
Oh, so which trainer is that? I know there's a couple, like
Brian at West Country Kennels.
Where's that at?
Lester Prairie.
Yeah. I know there's like Krecklau German Shorthair, like they know they board, and they I think that one's in like close to Isle.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd be further. I can't even say it because I probably just butchered where he was at, but I think he's over like that Glencoe area somewhere in there.
Okay. Yeah, this so Leicester Prairie is northwest of Glencoe, probably about 10 minutes.
Nice. So you took a personal or took it to a trainer.
That's right.
We can just kind of skip question three, but what was their biggest takeaways from hunting with your dog, like your hunting and working with your first bird dog?
So I think for me, it was just kind of maintaining a level of patience, knowing that she's going to work at her own pace to a certain extent, but kind of to back that up for me was reps and consistency. And because I travel enough, I'm not getting out to Western North Dakota like I used to. That's where I grew up hunting all the time. So I'm hunting stuff in Minnesota, which isn't producing as good a bird population. And I would get reps with her, but she would also get frustrated after a little bit of time, like 3-4 hours. And we're seeing, you know, a couple of hens, pretty rough. So I would take her some game farms just to get her some wins and get her some wins on the board, and that would help her out. And for me, you know, the first 3-4 months that I hunted with her, we probably shot 60, 70 birds and just had an absolute blast. And mix of wild birds, mix of raised birds, but just getting the reps in was kind of putting that into her brain that this is what I'm doing, this is how I'm going to do it. And she's always ready to rock.
Nice. And ain't nothing wrong with some put and takes when you can do it. So that's how I started my first dog. Cause I didn't have access to pigeons at the time. So
yep.
Then I found a guy on Facebook Marketplace. Yeah.
Well,
he was good. His pigeons were pretty good price too. So it made it work.
$3.99.
But no, it wasn't $3.99. I was trying really hard to learn how to do it myself. I was like, I just don't have the time or the patience to go and try to trap pigeons. But you haven't gotten a second dog, so
no, but I'm already talking about it. I'm gonna give her another year, and then we got beer delivery.
How old is the Springer Doodle?
So she'll be 3 in April. So not this summer, but maybe next. I'll probably pick up another pup. TBD what that breed's going to be at this point, but definitely looking for something purebred. I don't really care about the shedding factors.
There's a good Springer kennel. My uncle gets all of his Springers from.
Nah, I got a little short hairs coming, dude. You want a short hair? You don't want a Springer.
He wants.
Hey, dude, let me
wants,
tell you about.
I think I want a Springer.
He wants a wire.
Jeff's really trying to get rid of this wire here on this podcast.
Freaking comedy wire.
Shoot it. But.
Cool. Jeff, we are recording now. I can't even think of the name, but my uncle, he's gotten all of his. Part of Springer's on the same kennel. Yeah, sorry, I wanted to say pointer. Springer's are the same kennel. I can't exactly say where it's at, Minnesota, but they were at Pheasant Fest a couple years ago, so I did hold one of their pups.
Okay.
But yeah, he's like 65 now, but he moves like he's 35. But he's got every one of his Springers has been out of the same kennel, I think. So.
Okay.
I can send you a message which one it was when I figure
it out. Do it. Yeah, I'm gonna be ready for it.
Or Cody is having a litter of pups, so if you do want a red dog, they are actually pretty fun to hunt around.
Just let me know, buddy.
To come down in Iowa and check them out.
So, Nick, what's the best hunting story with your first bird dog?
There's kind of two, and the first one's just real easy, which was the first day. And the first day that I got her, got her back from training, got everything done. I hadn't been able to have my own hunting dog for probably 20 plus years that I had been hunting, because I had been with this woman for so long. And that was just never an option. We finally just got to the point where it's like, hey, it's, I'm getting dog. This is happening. And the first day that I got her out there and we went and we set out some birds and she nosed them all up. She retrieved all of them. And it was just like, this is the best feeling ever. Because I had waited so long to do that because I grew up hunting. I mean, I started hunting birds in the Dakotas in the late 90s. And I didn't get harps until two and a half years ago, right? So that was fantastic. But I guess, you know, every hunt is awesome. Every hunt gets better and better. And this year had her out with a big group and we probably had 6-8 dogs out there. And we had a bunch of guys from out of town. And they needed to leave and they needed to go catch a flight. And so we still had a couple of birds left. They took their birds and my buddy and I stuck around and we hunted with just harps. And the two of us had an absolute blast with her. And it was really cool to see her come into her own and nose all those up for us and just worked a lot harder than I'd seen her work before. Starting to kind of show more of that true working dog style as opposed to this little designer dog running through the field. That was awesome to see. And it was really enjoyable. And my buddy and I both kind of looked at each other like, holy shit, she's actually getting it. This is really great. She's doing a good job. And left there feeling pretty friggin' good.
It's awesome. So are you mainly hunting Minnesota then, or?
So this last year I hunted Minnesota, South Dakota. And then I took her up near Clam Lake, Wisconsin, and we went and chased ruffies for a weekend. Nice. And nice. That was kind of our first experience up there. We'll definitely be doing that some more this next year. But that was also kind of a challenge for her. She's not used to it. She's used to a field. And then we throw her in some heavy, heavy timber and she's going, what the hell am I supposed to do in here? And not trained to follow commands and, you know, go like a field dog necessarily. So it was a bit of a challenge for her to get in there. But once she got a couple up and she started to get the picture, started kind of working the edges a little bit better. And we actually ended up getting, I think, 4 out of our 5.
Nice. Just one trip to Wisconsin then, or you chasing ruffies in Minnesota then too, or?
I'm not chasing ruffies in Minnesota. I missed out on that trip. A couple of my buddies that I shoot with went up to the Brainerd Lakes area and they were chasing some, but I didn't get a chance to go up and do that in Minnesota.
Yeah, there's quite a few guys that go up there. I say I'm from like damn near Canada, so I grew up with ruffies.
Okay.
It's like up by Lake
Lolo. Southern Canadian.
Yeah.
Why do I go with French hair?
I'm from Quebec. I'm a French Canadian.
And damn D-gens from upcountry.
Hell yeah.
To be fair,
fucking quoting Larry Kenny now. Come on.
Nick, maybe you might have said this and maybe I missed it. I apologize if I did. Did you say you did any waterfowl hunting with your
sprinter? No, I haven't done any waterfowl with her. Interestingly, though, I did drop one in the middle of a pond this fall and she went out and got it and swam back with it. And, like, I didn't expect that at all. I'm probably totally underselling it. Like, I sound like I'm down on this dog. I love her. She's friggin' amazing. But I had zero expectations. I didn't know she'd make it past gun breaking. And now she's turned into a hunting dog. Now she's doing all the right stuff. We go out, we find birds, we bring them home. Yeah. I'm having a blast.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was, when you actually said it, I kind of like turned to Duna. I was like, hey, man, it's like not for a flushing dog, not a bad mix. Because we have cockers, which are just, you know, shrunk down springers. Yeah. And then, you know, they say poodles were a retriever, you know, originally. So, I mean,
yeah.
you'd think
smart. So, yeah,
you would think it would probably work out.
Definitely.
Especially if you found, like, if you were able to, like, now I'm not advocating anyone do this, but if you, you know, you were to breed them for hunting instead of, you know, looking, right? It'd be a little.
There is a kennel in South Dakota, I want to say near Brookings, that specifically breeds doodles for hunting. And. I found out about them after I'd already committed to this dog, which, whatever. It is something I'll take a look at again. They're all Labradoodles and Golden Doodles. There's no Springer Doodles. I have not seen any other Springer Doodle breeders out there other than the one that we got ours from. So that is a consideration. I did go to Pheasant Fest in Sioux City, Sioux Falls a couple weeks ago, and there were a couple of Poodle Pointer breeders there as well, yeah. Which I don't know. That was in consideration when we were looking at this one.
Poodle Pointer guy. Yeah, we were.
I got a picture of Greta, and she's freaking the cutest little thing ever.
Dude, that whole dog section of Pheasant Fest there in Sioux Falls is always so packed with people. I walk towards it, and I mean, I hate crowds of people. I'm like, I don't want
to shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah,
it was shoulder.
If you really want, cute one, there's a Gordy the Gordon.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get a little. I want to get a teckle. So like a little weenie dog that's bred to hunt and do it all.
Why don't you just get like a Yager?
I don't know. I've heard people try to steer me that way, but I want what I want. I want a weenie dog, and I want to name him Carl.
Hot Carl.
Yep, that's what I want. And I want to carry him around in my bird vest, and then when the pointing dogs point, I'll throw him out like a little Pokemon. And that's his whole job, is to be cute and to put my birds in the
shit air. That's not it.
Yeah.
No, there's Greta. She's a Poodle Pointer.
Oh yeah.
Whose dog is that?
There's a guy out here that we work with, and he's got some really nice Poodle Pointers.
I was saying, because Greta, like, if you looked at her, like, you'd think wire hair or something.
Yeah, it's a more tighter coat.
Yeah. All she has,
you can tell, is dog.
Yeah. She, my buddy Pat, she's five, I think at this point she was 7, 8 months old. But no, that was, I think that was the first time we met, like, actually, like, hunted together was that time. And for where we're at, we shot a limit, so that's pretty good in North Dakota.
Every Poodle Pointer I've ever met has been a real nice dog. So
the guy up here always said, the tighter the coat, the better it'll be. So if you're ever looking, for one, look for the tight coats.
This is how it all starts, man. You come into quick talk like this thinking you want one more dog of a specific breed, and then you leave thinking you want three dogs.
Now you got a red dog, you got a lab, you got a poodle or a poodle pointer,
a Springer Doodle. There you go.
And it ain't all sunshine and rainbow. Sometimes you look around and go, how did I get here?
Yeah, there you go.
Next thing you know, you got 10 dogs.
That's my question that every day.
Yeah, but more days than not, especially in hunting season. It's usually in the off season I have that question. And during hunting season, most of the times, like, I go, yeah, that's why I feed you all year. That's why we do that shit.
If anybody's wondering about a German dog, they do have an off switch. He's over here. He's an exception though. He can turn on the field, but he gets home, he likes his couch.
Mine are like that. Yeah, that's how they're supposed to be, dog. Gone are the days of the crazy German show here.
I do have a question for Nick.
I call bullshit. Mine's drinking a Busch Light King right now.
I didn't say they weren't German, dude. I didn't say they still do German shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Cody's got a question for Nick. So
I'm sorry.
So earlier, Nick, and we were kind of going through the questions and everything. What was something that you would wish you would have done differently with your first bird dog?
Kind of given the situation and what I was facing as far as being on the road all the time and not having the past experience and knowing I wasn't going to be able to, and this goes to, I think what Stephen had said earlier is like, you're either all in or you got to get somebody to do it. I do regret that I'm not around enough that I didn't get to train her myself. I really would have loved to have done that. I did spend a lot of time working with her though, which was, you know, fantastic. And we bonded really well. Outside that, don't know. I mean, she's been fantastic, and I'm loving every minute of it. I hunt probably, you know, 6, 8, 10 weekends a season. So it's always out running around, and she's always there with me.
Nice.
You know, the thing that I think that I'm challenged with most is that I did spend so much time one-on-one with her. And that kind of goes back to that story about, you know, like, what was that best moment? Is she and I were always one-on-one. And so when we were out with larger groups and we had 6, 8 dogs out there, she gets kind of apprehensive and she's not working as hard as she does when she's on her own. And when my buddy and I finished out together and everybody else was gone and all the other dogs were gone, then she turned into a whole different dog. And I think that that socialization in the field is a big thing for guys like me, that I've got one dog and I don't hunt with big groups all the time. I'm usually out by myself or with one other buddy. So It was kind of startling to see the difference between here's Harper in group mode and here's Harper in solo play. And it was a big difference.
Yeah.
I got a question, Nick.
Yeah.
You rocking a badass mullet, dude?
No. I just got the pro going right now. I got it all.
Me and Drew were arguing if you were rocking him. I was like, dude, he's rocking a badass mullet, dog. He's from Minnesota.
I should
from Minnesota.
Give this shit right here. Just let it rip. No.
Need some stairs in there.
Dude, I thought for
I could
sure.
do that. Do it in the eyebrows too.
I thought you were gonna pull that hat off.
That's the new thing, is to like cut one piece out of your eyebrow, isn't it?
Yeah, the new thing with Vanilla Ice, yeah.
I thought he was going to take that hat off. I thought he was going to have a Tennessee top hat. I thought he was going to say that he would have been an amateur in Minnesota. He was going to pull the upper out.
This is the Minnesota flow, that's for sure. I got that shit going on.
He's like, yeah.
By the way, if you guys haven't, you got to watch the all-hockey hair team from the 2024 tourney.
Dude, those are sick. The high school kids, I saw that, dude. Yes. That was, they all had badass bleached mullets. I fucking saw that.
The one kid had leopard print hair.
Yeah, except for the kid with
the leopard print. He walks up looking like Fleety. Yeah.
And they all skated out and went.
They got huge mustaches. They got full beards. These are 17-year-old kids, and they're more hair than I had when I was 40. This is
corn-fed Minnesota boys.
Yes.
One of the guys I knew from the town over, he won it in 2014.
Oh, dope.
Yeah. And he wasn't trying. He was just that greasy.
Wait. He won the all hockey, the award for the best hockey hair in 2014.
Yeah. Go look him up. Alex Holstengard is his name.
I love it.
Yep. He won in 2014 for Rosa.
Well, I mean, Rozo puts up some real champs when it comes to the hockey hair.
I mean, the hockey in general, Loro and Rozo.
Yeah.
You're talking about two of the best small town hockey programs in the world.
Oh, yeah. We always joke growing up that those guys would show up. Yep.
Hockey Town USA. Rozo and Loro.
Yeah. They'd roll up wearing all black. They roll up wearing all black, black jeans, black shirts, and bright blonde hair every friggin' time. And it was just like their hockey uniform. And those guys would pull their helmets off to do the national anthem. And it looked like, you know, somebody spilled bleach in Rozo or War Road.
Say War Road, definitely. I think that's their tradition, is bleach their hair. Like TJ Oshie was bleach hair. Brock Nelson. There's some big names, those two small towns.
Yeah, there are.
Some Miracle on Ice, a couple guys on the Miracle on Ice team.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts watching the hockey tourney up here. I mean, it's the equivalent of basketball in Indiana or football in Texas. It's huge.
If they should just move it to the U.S. Bank and they'd sell that sucker out.
They put 140,000 people through the X this year to watch hockey for a 4-day tournament.
Right.
I was gonna say, wasn't like it sold out damn near every day, basically.
Yep.
They couldn't fit anybody else in there.
No, in a 20, it's in a 18,000 person rink too.
Yeah.
I say they wouldn't be able to do it at the old Ralph. The Ralph only holds 12, so.
Say, Nick, how much bird hunting do you do here in Iowa?
Not enough. I don't want what?
Yeah, we don't want to get into that.
I was going to say, dude, he said not enough, and Cody probably said too much.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure I saw half your population here in northern Iowa this
past year. So I've got a couple buddies with land in northern Iowa, and I couldn't make it down this year just due to scheduling. Grew up hunting in northeast Iowa. My grandparents are in Rochester, Minnesota, so we'd pop over the border and go hit northeast Iowa. And then I went to school in Des Moines, and I lived in a fraternity house. I kept a shotgun in my trunk of my car, Honda Civic, and I would drive up to Story in Webster City, and I'd go walk ditches on my own and shoot birds. Yeah. And then I'd bring them back to the fraternity house, and we had a commercial kitchen, and I'd be cleaning birds in the kitchen and throwing feathers and shit everywhere. And a bus would pull up, and there'd be a whole bunch of drunk fraternity and sorority kids piling out, and I'm sitting there holding dead birds, and they're going, "What the hell did you do?" So that was
Drake.
That was fun. I was at Drake.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, they actually just made the NCAA tournament. So
yeah, they just won their MIAC. Is that what they're still in? Missouri Valley.
Yep, Missouri Valley. Yep.
You know, I know that
the hot team.
Well, you have to let me know if you ever want to do some hunting up in northern Iowa. Let me know.
You know, I definitely do.
We're big time hunters. We go a lot of times up in northwestern Iowa and everything too. So I'll have to link up one of these days.
Yeah, and I got cousins from Yankton area and Freeman area, and a lot of them live in Sioux Falls now. So it's easy for me to get down to Sioux Falls and then pop over to northwest Iowa.
Nice.
Yeah, I know the feeling of people kind of looking at you weird. I live in like a townhome. We share a driveway. And this fall or whatever, I was hunting one random Saturday, and I came back and I shot my limit of roosters, and my neighbor came driving in, and I was just cutting up the roosters on the trunk of my pickup, and they're looking at me like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah, I don't have a clue.
No. Like, is this guy a psychopath? Like, no. No, I just like
possibly,
to have fun.
Possibly.
Possibly. But what are the odds that two serial killers live in a townhouse next to each other? You know what I mean?
Maybe two serial killers in the same block.
Yeah.
You guys have a common wall. Just like serial killer vibes going back and forth. He's listening to you right now, by the way.
Yeah, probably. He's like, "I knew that guy was one. We should team up one day."
I told you.
Walk out tomorrow, and he's just going to go, "Come on, buddy. Come on." Yep.
I knew something was wrong when they didn't recycle.
It all goes to the same place anyway. You guys think you're recycling, it goes all to landfill. Bro. Just an FYI.
Dude, are you one of those guys, bro? You don't put your shopping cart back either, do you?
I do. That's my biggest pet peeve. I avoid Walmart for that. I go to Target. I go to Aldi, because Aldi, you actually have to put your shit back. It's like your quarterback.
It's all that separates us from the animals, man.
Oh, no. I'm serious, though. It all goes to the same shit place. The wife, she gets a little pissed off when she's like, "Oh, we should really recycle all these bottles," and we're at like a church event.
It all ends up out in the
Pacific. I was like, it all goes to the same landfill, so yeah. It's all getting dumped in the same spot. And they're like, "No, it's not. It's going to recycling." It's like, no, it's all going to the landfill.
It all ends up off the coast of Southeast Asia anyway.
I'm pretty sure Wyatt believes in flat Earth, so.
I do believe the kids in Africa think that the 49ers won the Super Bowl this year, though.
Oh, fuck. Now I got to work harder to cut this shit out.
just write down what time we're at.
Hey, just remember why
we're at the time. Or Anta's telling me here.
I full on knew this is gonna be a two part series on this one.
No, well, definitely.
We gotta bank some episodes, so it's. Yeah. Well, thank you, Nick, for sharing.
Absolutely, yeah,
son of a bitch, Rick's.
Well, there's that.
All right.
Folks just abandoned the podcast?
I don't know. Something's going on.
All I heard was bitch rigs and then nothing.
Why is a kid?
A German dog is going to German, dude.
Yeah. He ain't got that all thing right. House trained yet.
All right. Well,
a skunk must have ran through the room.
Sorry, well, Goose is trying to take over my spot for the podcast.
Bro, that's a good looking boy.
So we'll go on to the next person on my screen here. So Cody, why don't you give us, you know, I'm sure people that listen to the podcast, they've heard you a couple times, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're coming from, and so on.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I'm a frequent flyer here on the Upland Nomad podcast. So my name is Cody Tilk. I'm coming from here from Central Iowa. You know, a little known fact about me, I train and breed Hungarian Vizslas. And so my first bird dog I ever had was my first Vizsla. Her name is Bella. And she's actually she's 6 years old right now.
Nice. So I guess you answered our first question.
Yeah. It's kind of going the right.
Studying up, huh?
Yeah, what, got my notes.
It's only so, four people to study.
What training methods did you use?
Yeah. Especially with my first bird dog and everything too. I mean, I got a lot of inspiration from dog training and everything from kind of, you know, growing up, you know, hunting with my dad, who predominantly had, you know, pointing labs and then German short hair pointers. And a lot of his friends in the friend group had like other, you know, GSPs and Britneys. So a lot of the inspiration for dog training I had came from like Standing Stone Kennels, their YouTube channel, from Cat and Ethan. So I leaned in heavily on their YouTube page, watching their puppy training series. And then also to Scotland from Wing Shooting USA. I was routinely watching like his hunting videos and his dog training tips and taking a lot of tips and tricks from both of those sources for training my first bird dog ever.
Nice. So, what would you say would be some of the mistakes that you might have made and realized while training your first bird dog?
Yeah. So, probably a lot, or at least, you know, some of the mistakes I made especially with my first bird dog. I say, so obviously she's my first dog I ever trained. So she was kind of like the guinea pig or the experiment. Kind of learn and figure things out one step at a time. I would say one thing that I wish I would not have done, being more experienced as a trainer as I am now, is I kind of tended to shoot pretty much anything and everything over her, whether she worked the dog like how she was supposed to, you know, properly pointing it, not going in and busting the bird or anything. So that was one thing, is pretty much if anything she pointed, or even if she went in and mishandled it or flushed it, I would just shoot it. So we kind of tend to have a little bit of an issue with space from me. But, you know, she is my meat dog. She is a dog that I know if I can call on the ground, I know we're going to find birds and everything. It may not be perfect from like a NABDA or AKC hunt test standards, but I know we'll find birds and we'll know we'll fill the freezer for sure with her on the ground.
Nice. So, like, what would you say it would be like your biggest takeaways from training Bella?
I would say probably my biggest takeaways I would have from training Bella would be, make sure you're just being patient. Don't rush, especially when, you know, you get your first bird dog, there's a lot of excitement. You're just kind of wanting to jump in hot and heavy. You want to make sure you don't rush. You want to make sure you keep it nice and fun, relaxed as far as that goes. Because obviously, especially, you know, with Vizslas and everything too, you kind of need to have like a soft game or don't train with them and everything too as well, because they don't really take very well to pressure. So just make sure you just take things nice and slow and work from step by step, and make sure you have a good foundation when you're at the level that you're at before you go into the next progression.
I know it was brought up earlier, but did you find it kind of hard to like not have like super high expectations when it came to training your first bird dog there?
I mean, I had a lot of high expectations at the jump, just because, you know, growing up with my dad, he always had the dog power, and I was always hunting behind his dogs, and I wanted my first dog to be great like theirs right out the gate. And so I constantly would put on a lot of pressure on my dogs, or on the Bella in particular. But the nice thing about her is that she took to the training very, very well. And she was, the nice thing about Beast was that they're really always eager to please. And she was just really quick to train everything too. So she caught on to everything really well. And she ended up being actually one of our ace fur dogs in our group. You know, she was always my motto, especially with Beast was, is my dogs were always the first dog in, the last dog out of the field. And she was always the workhorse, the foundation as far as my program that I have going on here.
Nice. No, I know it was Bella when we were hunting together up in North Dakota that was really loving up on me when we're inside, and definitely showed her off switch.
And I just trying
like
to
five pictures to my wife, like, oh, we should get one.
Drew got a Vizsla a couple months ago, her name's Spark. And when he first got her, first thing she did was crawl up on the couch and just like burrow into us. You know, she was kind of unsure of the surroundings, a lot of dogs around, new people, and dude, she's like the biggest cuddler. And then you take her out and you let her loose, and she freaking burns up the country.
Yep. I mean, that's the nice thing about Vizslas is, I mean, the nickname is Velcro Dog. I mean, pretty much wherever you go, they're right there. Wherever you're sitting on a chair, couch, or fine, I mean, they're going to be in your lap. So, I mean, they have that off switch, but like I said, the moment you get into the training and field or hunting or any bird that you're chasing after, I mean, they're all gas, no brakes.
Yeah, I know. It's like really, that first day we hunted together too, I was talking to Wyatt too, and I'm like, God, they're just little speed demons. It was a full sprint, full tilt boogie the whole time. Like, they never slowed down when we were out in the field.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the nice thing about, especially Bella in particular. Like I said, she's my workhorse. We can start, like, especially here in Iowa, shooting time, 8 o'clock, and go all the way till 4:30. I mean, she'll want to continue to keep doing everything afterwards, and basically off to kind of regular her in, and she won't like it very much, but I mean, we're kind of limited with our shooting time and everything here, but I mean, she's always ready to hunt and ready to go, and she's just my little ball of energy, and I would not be where I'm at today with my hunting career and training and breeding program if it wasn't for her. She was kind of the foundation as far as our program here.
Hey, y'all. I want to thank you for listening to part one of the Beer 30 episode. Make sure you stay tuned for part two coming up soon. There's a lot more stories and a lot more laughs to be shared. Thank you for listening.